employees and obtaining fixtures is cumulative. So it's, she's saying that these will be examples of major investments that you would made rather than you would have to have made all three of them.
I think we'll change included to such as.
Yep. I think we can cure that. The one thing, Amy, if you could talk to staff during the lunch break, I just
something we get done.
Might get done before the lunch break, but depends.
Okay. Well, then I just the distinction between licensed and registered under A2.
Yeah, we're checking on that, Commissioner.
Yes.
Okay. That's a.
I got that.
That's a high level issue. So.
And just to address the issue of applied versus approved, out of 433 applications applied to the state, 305 were rejected. So we can't go with just applying because so many get rejected. It has to be approved.
May I respond? I think that makes sense if you are looking at Section A1, where you are registered, which I think it should be licensed, operating, and in good standing. That clearly captures that population of people who have actually been licensed by the Oregon Health Authority. And I think Section 2, if you were to change that to has applied and has demonstrated the following, if you add in the language that Commissioner Fritz was suggesting about having your OHA license, that might be and or you could add that language, and I'm happy to talk with staff about how to structure that to capture both of those scenarios.
That would allow anybody who's purely gaming the system to apply under that clause. That would apply for people who didn't have any intention of getting an OHA. They put in their application perhaps knowing that it might be rejected because they're just going for recreational.
Commissioner Fritz, I think that if you include the piece of this where they've incurred significant financial obligations such as a lease, hiring employees, or obtaining fixtures and equipment, I mean, you could come up with a number of other pieces that would fit that. I think if you do include it but not limited to, you capture that. If you were to pair the investment and the application, I think you capture people who are truly well-intended in this process. And I can tell you stories of clients who have purchased buildings, doing some of the build-out, getting their permits, and then they're planning on turning in their license application, and they intend to operate in the medical market for, if it were up to them, they would operate indefinitely in the medical market, but they will at least operate in the medical market through fourth quarter of next year, and then they will make a business decision whether they want to transition or not. But at this point, I think everyone who is entering this market is operating as a medical dispensary.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next three are Jason McGrew, Margot Lucas, and Beth Cook. And the last three who signed up will be Sandra Storm, Jesse Horton, and Chris Martiette.
Welcome.
Hi, thank you. My name is Jason McGrew. I had a marijuana dispensary on 46 and Hawthorne for over a year when the regulations came out. There was two of us. The Canna Connection is across the street. They were around the corner on 46 and Hawthorne, and I was right on the street. Anyway, when the 1,000-foot rule came out, we had to race to register, and they beat me by 3 minutes. So they were grandfathered in, or they got their license, and I didn't. I've been paying on that lease, waiting for recreational to open up and make it fair. I really hope Commissioner Saltzman's agenda comes through, and you guys make it fair to everybody. All the grandfathering in I'm hearing would be eliminated if you just made it a fair market. The people that already exist could stay existing, and new business could apply as well to share the market. Otherwise, you're just giving them a neighborhood and a lockdown, and it just seems really unfair to me.
So you had a medical license when?
No, I was in business before there was medical licenses. On March 3rd of 2014, you had to apply for a medical marijuana license. That's when they became officially accepted in Portland. There were several that were existing before that, and for years they were existing.
Okay, we'll have staff come back and address your particular situation. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Margot Lucas, and I represent the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, and I'm also a dispensary owner in Salem, Oregon. And I wanted to speak to Commissioner Fritz's idea of helping those existing medical dispensaries and those that have been working with the medical community. I just have a concern that there's an assumption that people after a certain date, which right now we're considering July, that there's a presumption that those people that weren't licensed prior to them are not serving medical community. I think that's a mistaken assumption. There are many people who are now seeking second locations, or people who were bumped out of an earlier location that are now seeking another location. And I just wanted to speak a little bit to the process and how long it takes to pursue one of these locations. In my instance in Salem, we put together a medical marijuana ordinance, and then it took me 7 months of active nose to the grindstone looking to find a location that would fit into that ordinance. And then beyond that, it took us another 5 months to go through our licensing process with just the state and then again with the city before we could open. So there's a long and arduous process for these people, and you would be cutting off a lot of these people in the middle of that. Again, I want to speak to the historic nature of people serving patients. I myself have been a grower for some time and have served patients on a grower-to-patient level. And then again, as we advanced with some of the dispensaries, I also run 2 medical marijuana clinics in the state. So some of us, and I just got my license on July 1st. So you can see how there are people who are maybe not quite through that full process that would be eliminated that have actively and for long term served the community. So we would like to consider that and maybe make a compromise of ordinance date for the language. Thank you.
And thank you. And thanks to the input from United Food and Commercial Workers, one of my favorite unions.
Thank you.
That was why we had the hardship amendment. So we hope, and we've heard from your folks, that does meet the needs of the particular dispensary here in Portland. Thank you very much for your partnership.
Good afternoon. My name is Beth Cook, and I also represent United Food and Commercial Workers Local 555. As you all know, USCW is Oregon's largest private sector union, representing over 20,000 workers in Oregon and Southwest Washington from sectors including retail, pharmacy, and the newly emerging marijuana industry. And I just want to say we recognize the dedication that's gone into crafting language to help develop a strong marijuana industry in Portland while providing community benefits. We are actually actively organizing workers within the cannabis industry. One of those dispensaries, as Commissioner Fritz mentioned, that we're working with, they didn't open until mid-July. So while we respectfully, we're very grateful for the potential hardship amendment, we still feel that this presents an undue burden on dispensaries. That organization is in fact getting ready to open a second location. As Margo says, these processes can take months, and there's a lot of work and a lot of expense that goes into this. And just as they're getting ready to open another dispensary, to have that rug pulled out from underneath them potentially, for a market that they have been serving, that they've been tremendous partners. This is an organization that has negotiated a $15 an hour minimum wage, ranging up to $32 an hour for their employees. We would like to see the city support those types of efforts. And as we're, organizing not only, the Stony Brothers, but others as well, we'd like to continue to see support for all the hard work that many of those dispensary owners, those licensees, have been putting in over the last few months. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we certainly value your contributions also. As a practical matter, those who have been going through the process are going to be very well positioned to being first in line for the new locations, having done all of that. So we'll certainly make sure that the process, once it opens up to everybody, is indeed fair for all.
Thank you.
Thanks, Beth. Okay. Do you have a few more people signed up?
The last three I have are Sandra Storm, Jesse Horton, and Chris, I believe the last name is Martiet, M-A-R-T-I-E-T.
Okay, come on up. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Sandra Storm. I am a prevention specialist with Multnomah County's Mental Health and Addiction Services Division. In my role, I coordinate Big Village, a coalition of diverse stakeholders working to reduce youth substance abuse in Portland. So Big Village represents over 100 members, including schools, healthcare professionals, law enforcement, parents, business owners, and neighbors. Just last year, we received the federal Drug-Free Communities Grant to focus specifically on reducing underage drinking and underage marijuana use. So our coalition met last week, and I wanted to pass along a couple of messages related to marijuana in Portland and specifically this ordinance and maintaining the 1,000-foot buffer and the importance of density issues. So the first thing that the coalition wanted to pass along is that while many parents, educators, and community members care deeply about the impact of the growing availability and visibility of marijuana on youth, it's difficult for folks whose work is not tied to the marijuana industry to take time off to participate in these and other meetings. But at our coalition meetings and among our partners, there's great concern, even among people who supported Measure 91, that as a community we're making decisions in the interest of business at the cost of protecting youth and other vulnerable people. The second thing was that, you know, our members wanted you to know that marijuana is not harmless, particularly to young people whose brains are still developing. Last spring, Big Village held a training for educators. Within a week of opening the training for registration, we had over 100 administrators, school counselors, and educators sign up. They were eager to gain tools to address marijuana issues at their schools and said that they felt completely overwhelmed by the increase of marijuana incidents at their schools. Marijuana is involved in the majority of suspensions within Portland. There's 68% of Multnomah County 11th graders say that it's easy to get marijuana, and about 58% say that there's little or no risk in using it on a weekly basis. And a lot of the kind of anecdotal things that folks hear is that, you know, it's healthy, it's natural. So what we can do, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. There's decades of research on effective alcohol and tobacco prevention interventions. Outlet density is one of the strongest prevention measures that can be taken to prevent youth access. It's not only about youth accessing via the dispensary itself, but through shoulder tapping and getting from family and friends. It's also youth exposure to promotions and advertisements within a concentrated area that has been shown to have an impact on young people. The last thing,
Sandra, yes. Thank you for reminding us why the 1,000-foot is important. And yeah. We did look into whether we could potentially have 1,000 feet from drug treatment centers and such, and
right.
Just determined we couldn't do that. But I really appreciate you being here and staying, because we've heard a lot from the industry folks. We haven't been hearing as much from public health and community folks. So thank you for making that point.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you. I do have one more thing.
Well, one is we just want to keep that 1,000-foot buffer in mind and not see it get whittled away at the interest of business. And the last piece is that the ordinance, as put forward, there's a lot of great things in it, but enforcement is really important. And we know from working with ONI's liquor license program on safe nightlife issues, Teresa Marchetti and Mike Boyer, who's now in that position, are absolutely great but stretched very thin. And so if this enforcement does happen, making sure that you guys keep in mind what it takes to actually enforce that, and putting forth that we'd love to be a partner in terms of that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Chris Martin. I am a small business owner, a dad, and I'm also on the Big Village Steering Committee that Sandra just spoke of. And I just wanted to come to echo some of what she said. We've worked with hundreds of educators and parents and community members over the last year, and their voices are that it's very hard to come to a lot of these meetings. When we come to these meetings, there's a lot of industry representation, but there's also a lot of parents and educators and community members that do care about this issue and are worried about the youth in our community. I don't want to patronize you, but I want to just read a couple things that I hope we keep in mind when we talk about density. Marijuana is harmful to the development of adolescent brain, and early use can lead to addiction. Research indicates that early and regular marijuana use can impact the developing adolescent brain, including increased risk for addiction, attention deficit, and reduced executive function. Adolescents who start using marijuana before the age of 14 are four times more likely to become addicted by the time they are adults. Marijuana can lead to negative health and social consequences for youth. Youth who smoke marijuana are at increased risk of poor school performance, driving under the influence, and higher levels of delinquency. As a lifelong resident of Portland, I've watched our city grow and how vibrant our city has become with wine and alcohol and now the marijuana industry. And I love how vibrant our city is. And that's not what we're saying. We're just saying that proper protections need to be included. And as we talk about all of these for youth, and density is one of the biggest things that can contribute to youth use. So thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hello, commissioners. Mayor, thank you very much for having me. I come to you today. First, my name is Jesse Horton. I come to you today wearing two hats. One as a business owner of a dispensary, Panacea, who recognizes that the original ONI proposal did not grandfather usher us in. to getting a recreational license, and now the new amendment from Commissioner Fritz does. So I appreciate that without a doubt. However, I was in agreement with some type of grandfathering process, even when I was on the other side of the potential negative side of that picture. Also, I come to you as a chairman of the Minority Cannabis Business Association, and I recognize that the more we continue to add and heighten barriers to entry into this industry, the less people of color, women, and disadvantaged have a chance to enter. So I want us to really consider that. My position may not be popular amongst some of my peers and dispensary owners here. However, my position was extremely popular in a number of the town hall meetings that ONI had to reach out to the city and ask, or to the citizens and ask what they cared about. And one of the main things that they mentioned, as a matter of fact, on the first line in that directive to ONI was to not grant preferential treatment to medical dispensaries from the people there who wanted to get into the industry and were finding it extremely difficult to find real estate, which I can definitely attest to. Understandably, we are allowing some preferential treatment, and I agree with that. I agree that none of the people who have been servicing the medicinal community should have a chance or have an opportunity for people to come in based on a timestamp and take that from them and essentially close their business. However, I think that we're in a dangerous situation where we're looking at risk versus right. Whenever we started to get our dispensary, we knew or we didn't have any idea whether there would be a recreational program in Oregon, and we still decided to do that. We definitely didn't have an opportunity or didn't believe that the city would grant us a protection to give us that first dibs at that recreational license. We hoped that would be the case, but that wasn't the reason we did it, and we didn't bank our whole business on that protection. We got provisional license leases that said that if we did not get that license or if at any point that license was taken away from us, that we would get out of that lease. And that's something that most of the dispensary owners that I know had as well. So we're looking at a point where all of us, when we got into the industry, said this was a risk. We knew that there might not be a chance that we would get protections that really I don't think government should be giving and really kind of centering the amount of competition in a really robust industry. We knew that might not be the case, but now people are speaking from a dispensary standpoint as if it's a right. Not only have we been serving the community, but you know what? Anyone who's given who's been given a license or who has applied should also get that right. And that is a very different discussion than what we had when we first entered this industry. And I want you, the commission, to definitely know that. I think that putting us in a position where we have to get back in line or be first in line for some dispensaries who haven't opened, who haven't served the community at all, I think that's fair. I don't think that shutting it off for people who want to get into the industry and maybe a little bit behind is in the best interest of the industry, is in the best interest of the local market, or of the citizens who loudly spoke against most of the things that we're doing right now.
Thank you. Thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you so much for making my closing argument for me. That was really great. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you for
thank
being
you
here.
Thank you very much. Okay. So, Commissioner Fritz, you've got some potential additional changes to your...
In the interest of time, the staff has looked at the request to change registered to license. The state uses registered, so that was why we proposed it. That's what we're proposing to keep. And then in 2A2, we would like to change prior to that date, including entering a lease, et cetera, to such as entering a lease, hiring employees, and obtaining fixtures.
Okay. You don't have to change and or in order for that to work.
Commissioner Fritz. On the Fritz Amendment, you're proposing to cure the so-called cumulative problem in two by saying such as?
Yes.
And... at least now, based on what we know, you're not proposing to change the registered.
Correct.
The only other thing, other than whether there's an appetite to close the gap, and I'm prepared to support your amendment, is under 2AC, the valid business license requirement of July 1 is not consistent with the hardship requirement. And so my suggestion would be simply strike that. I don't think it was intended to disqualify the hardship exemption, but that date was pegged to the original July 1 moving forward. So could staff, do you have an opinion on that?
We could amend one to say with a valid business license and then add that to two as well. We could just add the business license. The business license is one way that we know whether it's actually operating or not.
Right. I think that it's still within the spirit of one, the basic grandfather, if they've been before July 1st or not, because that is an indication of whether they're operating. Number two, I understand, I get where you're coming from, because if they haven't actually opened their doors, but they've given a substantial or have significant financial obligations, that they maybe have not obtained that then.
So actually then we would wrap in C into 2 and change the date to September 30th as well.
Yeah, I don't want that to be an automatic disqualifier for someone who's seeking.
That's a good spot, Commissioner Fish. Yes,
and I think it was originally drafted along. I mean, it was pegged off of the moving the date forward, not off the hardship.
Let's just move the medical dispensary has a valid City of Portland business license since on or before September 30th, 2015. Back into 2.
Into 2. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are we clear with those changes, Ben? Do you have any heartburn?
C is a subsection to 2, so it's already in that. So we don't need to.
But it's also a subsection of 1.
Small 2, right?
It's
part of the hardship.
So A, B, C, those are all cumulative as well.
But
so,
well, the point is that C says July 1st, and 2 refers to September 30th. So we need to put C into 2 and make it September 30th.
So you're going to put a valid business license in both A sub 1 and A sub 2?
Trace is telling me we don't necessarily need it in sub 1 because that's part and parcel of operating and in good standing.
Well, if we're removing sub C, then I would definitely advocate that we put it into A little I and A little I 2.
Okay, so then just the language in 2 is in 1 with July 1st and in 2 with September 30th.
Just for clarity, it would read registered, operating, and in good standing with the Oregon Health Authority since on or before July 1st, 2015, and has a valid City of Portland license since that date.
Yes.
And that language would be parroted again in the
Right, that's
section.
Much better language
but
than
bumped
my thank
to September
you,
30th.
Yes.
And what's the difference between registered and licensed? I mean, we heard testimony that licensed was the right word. So
no, the statute uses registration, so it should identify it as registration. It's in ORS 475-315. It refers to registering dispensaries with the Oregon Health Authority. So it should be registration.
Okay. So there's no substantive argument then? It's just what's the right word?
One is that registration is the right word.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Yes. Okay.
So, Mayor, with the changes Commissioner Fritz has proposed to her Fritz amendment, I second those changes.
Okay. And any further discussion about adopting? So we now we'll vote on the amendments before us. So the Fritz amendments as further revised are what are before us now. So let's take a vote on that, and then we'll take up the question of whether you want to put yours back on the table or not, Commissioner
right.
Fish, and
right.
yours, Commissioner
Salzman. And then
Dan's. Okay. So on the Fritz amendments as revised.
Novick?
I very much appreciate the change to such as. Aye.
This has been a great process, and I particularly appreciate Teresa Marchetti and Victor Salinas and Ben Walters, Claire Adamsick in my office, and everybody who's participated in it, particularly Senator Burdick and Rep. Leninger, who came today. The last speaker absolutely encapsulated it. We're talking about risk versus right, and we're trying to strike the right balance in offering new businesses the opportunity to enter while respecting the medical marijuana providers who've been taking care of patients and should be able to continue to do so. Aye.
This amended Fritz Amendment meets most but not all of my preferred changes, but this has been a transparent and collaborative process and one where along the way also I think we're all learning as we go along about this process. And Commissioner Fritz, I very much appreciate the willingness in the last 24 hours to engage this in a collaborative way, and I think we've landed on a much better outcome in this area of the law. So I thank you for that partnership, and I'm pleased to support your amended. I'm pleased to vote aye.
We're voting on the amendment, right?
The amendment.
There will be a subsequent
it's
vote
be
on
a second
package.
Reading next week on the whole package.
Oh, is that?
It's not an emergency ordinance.
Okay.
So.
Aye.
Hales.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, and actually to all my colleagues for working well on difficult stuff here. And just I was reflecting on this during the hearing. One, we have had a good dialogue with the community, neighborhoods, folks that are in the business, state legislators even, about how to try to navigate this change. And a lot of what we do here is just that, navigating change. Some people embrace it, say this is great, can't wait. Other people are worried about the side effects of change, whether it's growth or the addition of marijuana to what's legal in our state. And so a lot of what we do in this room is trying to figure out how to mitigate against the fears about what the change will represent and avoid some of the mistakes of the past, which we've seen with liquor licensing. And I think we're there, or at least we're close to there. And I appreciate the fact that that we've really got a good working dialogue underway about how these regulations will work in practice. And that didn't happen until the community came forward, and this council has done what we've done today. So thank you all. Aye. Okay, so Commissioner Fish, do you have any need to
withdraw my I withdraw my amendment.
Without objection, yours is withdrawn. Commissioner Salzman, anything else about your amendment before we vote on it?
I would just say that when I offered the amendment, I had no idea about the testimony we heard from an attorney about how buildings that have a mortgage can't provide any space legally to retail or medical operations. And I think that, you know, with all due respect to the people who from the Big Village, I do think that raises some real concerns about whether we're going to have any retail establishments in the downtown central city, because I don't know of any buildings in the downtown core that probably don't have a mortgage on them. So I think that buttresses even more the need to relax the 1,000-foot boundary in the central city area. But I think I've spoken my piece on that.
Okay. Roll call.
Novick?
I'm actually not sure that on its merits, I think this is a bad idea, but I think that I'm sensitive to PBA's and others' comments about you'd want to think about it for a longer period of time before endorsing it. And also, I have to say on this whole issue, I've told the commissioner in charge that I haven't devoted much time to it, so I'm going to defer to her. So with both of those things in mind, I vote nay.
I appreciate the suggestion. It's always good to discuss various options, even at the last hearing. No.
Fish?
No.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Hales?
I want to keep the door open to this idea later, but I don't think it's ripe yet. No.
Mayor, do we need to move the two amendments that were in our packet?
I believe they're already in the revised ordinance.
They were in the ordinance.
They were part of it, yeah.
So this ordinance will come back for second reading, not a public hearing, second reading and final council vote next week. I want to thank everyone for their work. The Fair Labor Standards Act does not apply to the city council, but I'll grant a 30-minute lunch break.
We're going to come back at 2:10.
2:10.